This episode of Creative Honey is brought to you by Type Ed. If you ever feel like your type skills could be a bit better, or if you want to just learn more about type, you should definitely check out Type 1. Type 1 is an online typography course taught by Type Ed, where you'll learn the fundamentals of type. It'll help you feel confident in your choices, whether you're working in print, digital, motion, or brand identity design. Take Type 1 at your own pace, and then join Type Ed for monthly Q&A calls as part of their alumni community. As a Creative Honey listener, you can save 25% off of the tuition by going to creativehoney.org/type-ed. That's creativehoney.org/type-ed. This is Maria Buyukos.
And this is Zachary Richard Hill.
And you're listening to Creative Honey.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Creative Honey. Zach and Maria are here.
Hey guys.
And this is going to be a little two or even three part little mini series of our podcast that's centered around the relationship between design and startups. So the reason why we're doing this is we're part of, or, you know, after this is released into the wild, we were a part of a startup weekend event in our local city, and we were there as coaches and consultants, and we were really excited to be a part of that.
Yeah, it was a really cool experience, and we got to, you know, really get involved with a lot of really cool ideas and get to see everyone being so enthusiastic and excited. And as a precursor to this event, we got to participate in another one. CalArts invited us to speak about UX, UI, and its relationship to the startup world. And so that was a precursor event about a couple weeks before the startup event. And as a continuation of this, we got to speak with another creative, which is Zach's boss, actually.
Yes. Yeah, actually, it was really great experience being able to go to CalArts and speak to some students about the relationship between UX and the startup community. It was a real honor. And yes, we had the chance to bring in Damian Krajicic to the podcast. And yeah, he's my colleague, my boss, and I've learned a lot from him over the last year and a half. Working with him in Active Color. I've always wanted to bring him on the show. We were waiting for kind of a good time to do that. And I think since he was part of the panel at CalArts as well, this was a perfect opportunity to chat with him a little bit and have a little bit of a roundtable discussion on what we talked about at CalArts. So stay tuned for that and enjoy the show. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Creative Honey, and today we have a guest that's with us, and it's a special guest because I work with him every day. His name is Damian Krajicic, and he is the creative director and lead UX strategist for Active Color, the studio where I work. And the reason why we're having him on today is because we did a panel discussion at CalArts talking about the relationship between UX and the startup world, and, you know, how each of these two worlds come together and connect. So, welcome to the show, Damian. We finally got you on, and say hi to everybody.
Thanks, Zach, Maria. Thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Awesome. Before we kind of do the extension of the panel discussion we had at CalArts, can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and how you got to where you are and what we've been up to at Active Color and stuff like that?
Okay, well, I'll give you a little background, starting from the early days, I guess. So I was born in Europe, in Croatia, and grew up, I guess, in a little bit of a dual interest childhood, with some geeky computer/mathematics interest and art at the same time, music as well. And those kind of went hand in hand during high school and elementary school with programming, getting some things done in that respect, as well as being involved in a lot of fine art classes and things like that. During college and after college, especially, I got in a situation where, just by chance, I started working with some people who were involved in the website development in particular. So that's when kind of all that background started making sense in terms of programming, in terms of art direction, and also psychology background that I actually have a bachelor's degree in. And then once we get into the UX side of things, it's actually a direct combination of all those three things. So approaching users and how they think, how they feel, knowing a little bit of the technology and understanding design as well.
Awesome. Thank you so much. We're really excited to have you on today and kind of continue the conversation that we had at CalArts with the students who were kind of interested in transitioning from kind of like the arts world into possibly applying their brains and skills to getting into the tech world.
Yeah, so let's just jump into some of the things we talked about at the panel discussion we had. So the first thing is, you know, what do you guys think about, where do you see the connection between kind of UX and design thinking and the startup world? What do you think, Damian?
Well, I think the interesting thing about design thinking is that it is a process. So the very fact that it's a process, it applies to the startup, because the startup community and the startup scene in general is a continuous process that evolves. So the point of design thinking is an evolving process. It's a process that that allows itself to fail and to restart again. So just by that, the nature of design thinking, that can be directly applied to startups, because it's very natural that any startup idea at its seed infancy stage might fail or might get to a point where it needs to be revised, changed, and tested, and then you go at it again from a slightly different angle. So that's the direct connection between the two, in my opinion.
Yeah, I totally agree, Damian. I feel like failure is really paramount in the process. A lot of times, very successful people will say how failure is the way they got successful. They just kind of failed over and over until they found what worked. And you have to do that when you're designing as well. And honestly, you can do that with life in general. But it's a really important tool, and to not be afraid to find out something that could kind of destroy the whole paradigm you created when you started the project.
Yeah, I think you guys both make some good points in kind of how everything's connected. And I just think, just to add to that, just in general, I think design thinking has always been around, and, you know, UX has kind of always been embedded in creative culture. I think just the big difference now is that it's starting to invade, that kind of thinking starting to invade how businesses operate, and it's now being seen as more valuable across the board, and I think that's how that bridge is being created.
Yeah, and I guess I'm old enough to remember maybe 10-15 years ago when we were doing interfaces and you know, primarily website experiences, that we were paying attention to these things. We just never explicitly defined user experience as a category, as a skill, as a profession, which today it definitely is. And just by labeling it, I think what's happening is that you now place so much more value on it and allow it to be a sort of a process or a very important part of the design process and business process as well.
Yeah, no, I think it has something to do with just kind of there, you know, when the internet and the first round of websites came out, like, you know, Web 1.0 and even Web 2.0.
I'm not that old.
I know, I'm sorry. Yeah, but I'm not trying to suggest that at all. But but what I was saying is that that in, you know, the early versions of the web, there weren't as many users, and I think just the web was such an exciting thing, so you can be creative, and you didn't have to worry about the user experience as much, even though you were doing it. It was just more exciting just to have a website, right?
Yeah, it is true. And I think in a way, as good as it was as far as being able to be creative, diverse, original, the user experience frequently suffered, because a lot of those websites who could be extremely creative ended up being a little over the top, and you couldn't find your way around the site. So so just that part right now, because everything is focusing around the user and the ease of use, the speed of use, you get websites that are far more functional. It would be nice to start seeing, again, a little bit of the balance between the two, where creativity and innovation come back. And I think it's starting to happen.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I agree. I think sometimes, like, it's almost like, you know, society or different things get like a reset. And then I feel like right now, like web design, for example, or app design got reset. And it's kind of like these basic building blocks, kind of a modular design. But now as that becomes more comfortable for people, then they're going to start experimenting again. And like kind of there's going to be like another kind of wave of that the ingenuity that comes with that.
Yeah, I think there's kind of an ebb and flow, you know. You saw it with the printing press and printing, that we learned how to print, and that was not necessarily exciting or super creative. And then as we got more comfortable with that medium, we started doing creative things there. So I think, you know, app building and website building will start to get, like Damian's saying, more fun again, a little more creative. And I think we'll already see that a little bit with VR and AR, and we're seeing it now even with flat screens and, you know, user interface design.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think there's, like, this really cool people have this really, like, this anticipation about the future of interfaces. Like, have you guys heard of the show Black Mirror?
No.
Have you? It's on Netflix. It's about, like, it's like a modern-day Twilight Zone, and every episode has, like, really, like, futuristic stuff, but, like, they really are big on, like, interfaces of the future. Like, it's always a little bit futuristic.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, you guys really need to watch this. You would love it. Like, they have, like, these amazing devices that are, like, gorgeous interfaces. Like, you could tell they hired some really amazing designers to do this stuff. But it's cool because it's just, like, very simple and very, like, utilitarian but really exciting at the same time. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of a realistic, you know, projection of, like, what could happen just maybe even, like, 5 years from now.
Yeah, totally. I think it's an interesting time. It's an interesting transition. And I think this kind of is a good segue into another topic that we discussed on the panel, was how can we take some of these things we're talking about, like the visual design problems that designers have faced for years, how can we take that, you know, that problem-solving aspect of what we do and implement it in a business environment? So I know that was a big topic we discussed at CalArts. You know, how do we take our problem-solving skills and that we use to maybe build layouts and choose fonts and typography choices? Like, how do we take that same kind of problem-solving to the business world?
Well, it's basically the same ideology. If you are approaching the problem from a user perspective, so from the perspective of the person who will actually be using that interface, that design, or if you translate it to the business world, that particular product, whatever it is, if it's a design product, if it's an interactive product of any kind, such as Amazon Echo or something like that, you're thinking, how will that end person interact? So we are dealing with that every day, you know, in a visual sense, designing user interfaces, but you can translate it to simply a business model. So in a business sense, you are simply approaching business problematics that way. What kind of a product are you dealing with? How are you making it work? Will it work from the user point of view? Will they be willing to use it? Will they be excited to use it? Will they be excited enough that they want to share it with other people? Will they be, you know, continuously coming back to use it? So all these problems could be then dealt with in using the research methodology that we use when we design a user interface. So we can try to have several interfaces compete with each other, test them. Based on feedback that we get during testing, we can revise it, create models that will pivot one way or another or work better than the other ones?
Yeah, to add to that, I think what you're getting at, Damian, is that businesses are becoming, at least successful businesses, are becoming human-centered. You know, so it's a human-centered design is a really popular term in the creative community right now, but human-centered business. So when you're asking these kind of questions, you're starting to think about your user, where maybe older businesses are just trying to, you know, especially like advertising companies or any company in general that's looking to advertise, will just throw out content and just hope someone absorbs it. Now I think companies are getting smarter and wondering, how can we curate our business and whatever content we are trying to put out there to consume, you know, how can we curate that to a user base? I think those are the kind of questions that are being asked now.
Right, and the great thing about that is, I think, in providing real value to the end user. Because if you're coming from the perspective of what do they really need and want, then you're really making their life better. So you're adding true value to the user rather than sort of selling them on something. So from a perspective of a designer or a business person, it's much more satisfying to work in that environment.
Yeah, that you guys are making some really great points here. I think just not that long ago, even just like maybe 5 years ago, we were still fixated on like selling things to people. Like, do you remember the big SEO thing? Like, you're just like selling people on SEO and all this stuff. But people are like kind of jaded. They don't want to be sold all the time. They do want to like have that exploratory experience. And like when you make the interface really well, you get that optimal engagement where people are going to continuously and like organically want to keep using that. And so it's just interesting to see how just not that long ago that wasn't as important. And as you guys are talking about, it's like established businesses are starting to jump on this and be like, shoot, we need to like do something to improve the way we design all this stuff and think about our customer base. But as far as startups go, you're moving at a really, really fast pace. So for any business, this is important. But for startups, you have to do this in a very short amount of time relative to the normal like lifestyle business. So, you know, you got to start thinking about that like right out the gate.
Well, I think the key word that we're all using, and it's even in the title, UX, is experience. So everything you just said made me think of people care about the experience now of, you know, of the brand they're interacting with or the product that they're interacting with. And that's kind of why UX is so important in business and in design now, because I think post 2008, I think especially millennials have stopped caring about, you know, material wealth and products, like physical tangible things to own. They want to share an experience. They want to talk about a trip that they took or a restaurant that they went to. I think just there's a shift towards how are they experiencing their entire lives. And so that, it's an exciting time to be a designer or a business owner, because now you can think about how am I going to build a worthwhile experience and integrate it into my brand, rather than just selling them, you know, products that may or may be, you know, be irrelevant to, you know, a user or a user group in general. So it's an interesting time for sure.
Yeah, and it's kind of, you made a really interesting point about how people want to share things now. They're really interested in experiencing things. If you look at the products that are coming out, whether it's the, you know, you get a monthly box with new things in it every month, or app you're downloading, or software, a lot of it's kind of geared towards finding or sharing experiences, which is so interesting. I mean, like, I think a huge percentage of products coming out right now do involve that in some way.
So I think these are all really, really good points that we've brought up on this particular topic. But just to segue a little bit and transition to something else we talked about at the panel discussion, was kind of the idea of failure as kind of a connection between the creative world and the startup world, because there's a level of failure that's experienced in both industries or both communities. And I know, Dami, you have a lot to say on this topic, that we've kind of talked about this back and forth a little bit. You know, how do you feel, what kind of role do you think failure plays in both the design community or the creative community and the startup community?
Well, first, starting from the creative community, for any creative person, whether they're an artist, musical artist, visual artist, designer, or any other creative person, we're going to experience moments of either doubt or just complete failure. Very often just doubt on a daily basis, mm-hmm. I would say.
Yes.
but failure, real failure here and there, where you're in a position where you just don't see a way out. And I think those for artistic, for creative people, those moments are actually moments of strength, even though they don't seem that way, because at that moment, you have nothing to lose, artistically speaking. And at that moment, you can be completely free and completely creative to take a new direction. So to me, those opportunities are immensely important, because the greatest, you know, creative moments happen then, and ideas and sparks that you otherwise wouldn't come across because you would be so busy producing or going simply on the road that you're already on. And translating that idea into the startup world, you know, you have this supposedly great idea, you're going with it, and it comes to a point where it's like, uh-oh, this is not working out, and it's failing, and now what? And so now you're at square zero, and you can feel as if you failed, but not necessarily so, because in that situation, you're just, again, having a chance to have a new start. So this is a little bit of a cliche, it's nothing new, but it really does give you a chance to, again, be creative about that business direction, which at that moment you can then literally take in any direction. So for creative people who are coming with an artistic mind, I think they just have to remind themselves that these are good places to be in, even though they are tough, but they're creatively good because they spark new ideas.
Yeah, 100% agree with that. When we were at, you know, talking about this at Cal Arts, you know, these people there, they tend to be on the kind of abstract thinking, you know, mindset. They have these talents to think of these really cool ideas, kind of out there stuff. And if you channel that, you know, you can explore these possibilities like through failure and through trial and error. And it's powerful because you get a different perspective every time you overcome that failure.
When I hear both of you guys talk about this topic, it makes me think of kind of that agile methodology that kind of surfaced with you know, developers and programming at first, but that's now infected sounds like a terrible word, but it kind of has spilled over into the design community and the startup community, because just the agile mindset is basically, you know, do a sprint or do a quick build on a project or a product and test it and see what's working, see what's not working, and then do it again. And I think there's a lot of failure that comes with that mindset, rather than build, never get a critique and never get a test and then see what happens. You know, so if you're open to failure early and often, you could kind of pivot and maneuver or maybe around bigger failures. So I think what you guys are trying to say, and I'm just trying to echo it, is that both creatives and startup founders need to have this idea of failure is okay as long as you learn, pivot, and grow from it, right?
Yeah, I agree with that for sure.
I absolutely agree. And the only thing to keep in mind, I guess, is you know, when you're designing something that's practical, that's going to be used by other people, it's not a work of art. So, you know, attaching yourself to a specific idea is very often not a good thing, because it doesn't allow you to make those pivots. You know, accepting that something is not okay is crucial, because then you can make changes and adapt it and change it. In a work of art, you don't care about what other people think. When doing a successful business, you should, to a degree. And then at the same time, be brave enough sometimes, I guess, to run with an idea that seems absolutely nuts, because you never really know. So in practice, I would say, in most situations, it's great to listen to other people. And sometimes I still believe listening to your own instincts sometimes really does pay off.
I think that's a really good point where for startup founders, but even for designers or creative professionals, they have to have that balance between, you know, trusting their gut and trusting what they believe is right is when it comes to their, you know, work or their product or their business, and being really open and able to listen to others.
Right.
And right. Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
And no, I'm sorry to jump in. I was just thinking of Henry Ford and his quote basically. And he said, you know, if I asked other people what they think they need, they would say faster horses. Mm-hmm. So you know, that's kind of that. And at that time, you know, engine wasn't really, and the car industry wasn't there yet. So it was at an infancy stage. You know, it took time for that to take off. So it needed that resolve and that persistence and that, you know, kind of like heart and gut to really push it through. And I would say with possibly some major ideas that are kind of altering, life-altering, they take that you know, well to see it through for a little while, regardless of other input. Having said that, at the same time, testing again early and often and not building something for 10 years until you push it out, you know, is good. Facebook was out relatively quickly.
Right.
And changed many, 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 many times, and now look where it's at.
Yeah, like any organism that has adapted and evolved over millions of years and, you know, and constantly changes, we're going to continue to evolve as well. But also, many companies we've seen that have been around a long time continue to evolve over time. And I think there's one little example of this. There's this company called Blackboard. And when I was in college, they were relatively new, and they kind of just did a couple things. They made it easier for students and teachers to communicate and have you know, see the assignments and grades and all that. And then now they've expanded into like 20 or 30 different educational avenues and bought out other companies and all this other stuff. So it's just amazing to see the growth of companies. But that's smart. You want to continue to evolve and grow and have that abstract mindset to see opportunities. But also have a little bit of, you know, self-editing too. You know, it's got to be really well thought out at the same time.
Well, I think what you guys are talking about reminds me of Simon Sinek and kind of the idea of start with why. And the reason why I bring that up and bring him up in his book is the balance of where you find, if you're building a brand or a product, you know what your why is, you know why you're doing it. And from there, if you have that core, you could evolve and pivot and listen to others as long as it doesn't affect the core of your product, which is the why or the business. You know, so I think what you guys are getting at, and it needs to be a balance again, where you have your belief system, your core values, your culture as a business or as a product maker, but at the same time, you're able to let others come in and help you, or you listen to the users a little bit. So going back to what you said, Dami, about Henry Ford had his why, which was to build a better transportation system or a transportation unit, you know. So he listened. He might have listened to others, but he said, "No, I'm going to do this anyway." So the point is that yeah, listen, but you know, maybe not always let it affect your core values, right?
Yeah, and I think that it's kind of funny because a lot of entrepreneurs say like, "Yeah, I'm a little crazy," you know. Like maybe you do have to be a little crazy to believe in a certain idea, but being an innovator is not an easy road. You know, a lot of times innovators come to the market way too soon with an idea, way before it's ready, like you were saying with Ford. The thing is that you have to, you might have to see other people take your idea. You may have to maybe take that original idea that someone else already took and just modify it a little bit. And then before you know it, you have a new business avenue. So, yeah, you do need to get feedback, see what the market's like, and, you know, see how you can mesh that with your vision for the product.
Right. And it's kind of interesting that you said innovators, because with digital products, a lot of these startups and companies are innovations. even though they're digital, they are truly innovations. Before in the before the computer, those would be physical products. So naturally, the people behind them would be called innovators. But in the digital realm, you're just talking about these people as business people most of the time. But they are innovators in terms of how people actually interact with the rest of the world around them, and how much, for example, just social media changed the world. It's very interesting because it's not that long ago that we didn't have any.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's like a whole conversation in itself, where because social media is so new, if you even think about it, the internet is still fairly new in the course of human history, right? But it just shows how fast the technology is growing and how fast things move, where, 10 years, we haven't even celebrated the 10-year anniversary of the first iPhone. Right. But it feels like we did that 50 years ago, but we've only done it like, that was only like 8 years ago, but we were still using like Blackberries and right. flip phones, so it's interesting.
And this reminds me how important the technology and where we're at in terms of technology is, connecting that to what we can do both as designers, as UX strategists, and as business people. Because what tools we have to work with around us and what is supported in the real world is very important. So with the rise of AR and VR, obviously there's a whole set of opportunities that's coming up. Website technologies that we have now, just compared to a few years ago, have drastically changed to the better. And then, so we're constantly dealing with technology changes that affect us in terms of how we work, and in terms of what kind of work we produce, in terms of what kind of work our clients value from us. So it's a very interesting industry in the sense that it's constantly changing. So for creatives, it's very important, I think, to accept the fact that it will constantly change. So it's before 10 years ago, perhaps you had a few years of steadiness, where you could sort of settle in, this is how we do things. It's shrinking. That range of where you can feel comfortable is becoming much, much shorter day to day. And now it feels like you constantly have to shift slightly what you do, how you do, because not only is it changing from your own perspective, but it's changing, like I said, from the perspective of other people who are either using it or who want to hire you to build it for them.
Yeah, that's a really great set of points. The pace is so intimidating for a lot of people, especially if you're just kind of transitioning into maybe the startup world or technology world from another, somewhat unrelated field. It can just be like mind-boggling, your head spinning, but you really have to keep on top of it. Like every month almost, there's like new products coming out, new software, better ways to do things, and that optimizes, for example, with a startup, like that can optimize how quickly you can get your startup off the ground, or how many people you can reach, or what kind of data you can collect. So it's really important to, even though it's moving very quickly, to stay on top of it as much as you can.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with all what you guys are saying, and I think being open-minded and versatile is kind of what I, the answer to some of the things that you guys are bringing up when it comes to embracing technology and embracing how technology impacts both the startup world and the creative world. So I know that we try to do this at Active Color, right, Damian, but also myself as individuals, that we want to at least have a basic knowledge of a lot of different technologies and creative solutions, so we're able to be a little versatile and solve a lot of problems for a wide array of clients.
Absolutely. And not only the range of services that we can provide, but also the good thing is that for us, it's a great opportunity to keep curious and to have that childlike interest in what we do, because we keep learning, we keep evolving, we keep growing. So I think it's great in that sense that it's not a stale kind of a job, you know. It's a learning experience. As long as you have that natural curiosity about the world and about what you're doing, it's very fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. And Maria, I know you're doing, you know, as a freelancer, you kind of have the same kind of mindset where you're not, you might feel you're more confident in some areas as a creator, but you're trying to become more versatile as well and to be able to solve all kinds of problems as well, right?
Yeah, and I was talking with someone the other day, and they were like, how do you learn all this stuff? And I was like, well, I kind of have this like fixation with putting myself outside of my comfort zone like constantly. And it's extremely stressful, but like I learn so much and learn so much about people. And I think it's really, you know, we were talking a lot at the panel the other day about, you know, having that innate curiosity, which I think a lot of creatives do. You just want to know why this and why that and how and what, and that's really important. And you're going to learn so much about the world around you as long as you just stay curious.
Absolutely. And I think what we're talking about is a perfect segue into maybe the role a designer might have and all the different hats they might wear in a small studio like we have or a startup environment. You know, because I know here when we work, it could change day by day where, you know, I might do mostly design one day and then maybe a little less pure visual design the other day, maybe more strategy. And it just, we hop around day to day here at Active Color. I know, Maria, it's the same thing for you. So do you guys want to kind of speak about how many hats you have to wear either at a small studio or a startup?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say in a studio setting, it comes to pretty much anything related to a client's business. So very often they will need help, even if they don't know it, but they will need help from anything from pure branding, pure definition of who they are, what they do, and at their core, to their visual identity, to their digital presence, to their technology, and anything in between. So, and it can go as far as, counseling sessions that are very like personal.
Yes.
So you have to be very open to talk to people at a very human level sometimes, because, you know, they're all people and they deal with various issues at various times. So if you're truly there with your client as a partner, sometimes business is not purely business. It becomes, you're sort of like a friend sometimes who is helping them get through a tough patch in their business situation. Sometimes it's even more on a personal level, which affects their business. And so it can be as far-reaching as that, to more on the business side of things, where it can be either technology related, visual, and like I said, branding, and anywhere in between. And then as far as running a project goes, just in that particular segment, you're dealing with development, you're dealing with quality assurance, you're dealing with various technology setups, servers, things like that, project management. So there's a lot of different hats a person can wear depending on their position. So it's a little bit all over the place, but that's a good thing. And we try to, of course, segment the roles a little more as much as possible so that we're more efficient in the process. And then come the tools that we use to manage this process and make sure we're efficient in what we're doing. And at the end of the day, it's all about making sure the client gets the most value out of our time.
Yeah, you covered all the really important things there, Damian. It's kind of surprising when you're first endeavoring to start a business or a studio or startup how many different things that you have to do personally, especially when you can't afford to bring on a lot of other people or you're like bootstrapping. You really have to take on a lot of the workload yourself, and it is exhausting. But as you grow, you're going to be able to finally start bringing on people slowly but surely. But it is kind of a responsibility when you're first starting out. And it could take a long time for you to get to that point where you can have a bunch of other people do stuff for you. But like Damian was saying, like developing those relationships with your clients does come with other responsibilities too, as you become, you know, as they trust you more and all of that, you do become like a friend to them and an advisor. And that's a really good relationship to have.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's be clear, this is not just for, you know, a design studio or a creative studio. This can happen in a startup, you know, environment as well, or a new business, because if you're a creative person and you're one of maybe the second or the third person that's been hired, because, you know, there's been some studies that say the second or third person that's getting hired as a creative person, that's like going through the roof as far as percentage, something like 70% of, you know, first few hires are designers now. And I know I'm kind of rambling, so just to kind of, I digress, but the point is that you're going to have to wear many different hats if you're one of those first few hires, you know. So if you're coming in thinking, oh, you're just going to design, you know, or work in Photoshop all day, and you're one of the first few employees of a startup, I think you're sadly mistaken. You have to keep in mind that you're going to have to, like Dami said, project manage a little bit, business consult a little bit, you know, work on marketing, work on networking. You have to do so many different things other than design, especially if you're one of the first few hires in the startup business.
Absolutely. And, you know, this going back to design thinking, you know, just to make sure we understand that design thinking is not designing. It's applying that methodology of design thinking to solving other problems. So when you're hired as a designer in a startup, your design thinking skills can be applied to the business. So you're at that point designing that business as well. And that's the design. How will it work? How will people react and interact with it?
Yes, super great point. We kind of talked about this the other day as well, like how it's like little microcosm, like there's little systems within like everything in nature and in existence, like, you know, every little, you know, cell has its own microcosm. Same with your business. Like you're starting your business. That's like the first step of creating a little system. And then you're helping create another person's system and another person's. And then before you know it, you've helped all these people create all these other systems. But it's really important that you get your own down first. And that will help make you a better source to help all these other people or solve that problem for others.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, like Maria says, it starts from within. And, you know, if you want to really adapt design thinking into how you operate, even if you're not a quote-unquote designer, just it's all about how you perceive problems, perceive the world in general. And if you can adjust that and analyze that and tweak it as you need, then you could really adapt the design thinking methodology that goes beyond what you're doing as a, or what someone would do as a designer. So yeah, I think it's been a really great conversation, but I think I want to give all of us a little bit of time for some closing thoughts about how we felt about the panel that we did last week and how we could further kind of blend the startup environment and the design environment.
I think it was a really good experience getting to talk to students who are coming from areas not within the tech realm, who had artistic mindsets, and they wanted to see, they were putting themselves out there to try and see if there's another way they can use that, the way they think, to become better at design thinking. Because as we spoke a lot about earlier, being an artist and being a designer have kind of different, you're addressing some different things. Once you switch from being an artist to a designer, you're kind of in the service of others at that point. Like everything you do is pretty much in the service of others. Whereas as an artist, you can kind of just do your own thing for eternity if you want. So it's really interesting to see that interest. And, you know, sometimes they were like, well, how do I like step into this realm? Because, you know, I do music, you know, and we're like, hey, it's all about the way you think. And this is why we always like hammer, you know, design thinking to like a lot of our episodes, because we're like, hey guys, it starts with this thought process.
Right. And for me, the great thing is the curiosity of the students to learn and to grow and to be open to new ideas and to be open to change. And kind of like I said before, you know, it's about being brave and being willing to accept growth and to accept failure and to learn from it and to try new things.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, I know I said this to a couple of students last week, and I'll say it again. It's throw out the starving artist mentality today in 2016. I don't think that's true anymore. I'm not saying you're going to get, you know, super rich and famous, but my point is that it's never been a better time to be a creative professional, because and this connects to the startup world, creativity has never been more valued in a very long time. And so in other words, you know, startup businesses, even established businesses, are starting to see creative problem solving as a way to conduct business. Where I mentioned this again at the panel, where it used to be critical thinking or the breakdown of ideas used to be valued, and it still is, but now creative thinking is about building up ideas and finding new ideas. So I think now that's starting to at least work hand in hand with critical thinking in the business environment and the creative environment. So if you're a designer or even an artist, a filmmaker, whatever you're doing creatively, I think it's a good time to do it because there's real value out there. So.
And to add to that, the only hump, I guess, to get over is being able to let go of that artistic mentality. Because really, like Maria said, once you're doing this, once you're in the startup world, or in the creative industry, then you're at the service of others. So to kind of add to Zach's point, there has never been a better time. Yes, I absolutely agree that that creative people have so much opportunity now to participate and to contribute in industries and areas that are not naturally theirs. So basically, as long as there is a willingness to be open to trying out some of these other things, the skills that we learn as creative people early on can be really applied in startup community especially.
Yeah, to further add to that, to piggyback on the piggyback, if you're coming out of school or you're a new creative professional, just come into whatever environment you're working in with a really open mind and ready to participate and contribute rather than like an impose an idea or impose yourself into a project or into a business. So that's all I got here for me today.
Well, shoot, I think you guys summed it up pretty well. I don't have another thing to add like on top of, but yeah. So thank you guys for delving into that. I think honestly, just like they said, come curious. Have an open mind and don't be afraid to step into another realm that you're unfamiliar with, because you never know, you might find a secret talent there or a solution to a problem that's been bugging you for a long time.
Yeah, totally. And we want to thank Damien again for jumping on the podcast. We've been talking about bringing you on for a while. So
yeah.
Pleasure to be here.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Thanks for having. Thanks for coming on, I should say. And for everyone else that's listening, thank you guys for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Thanks so much, Damien, for taking the time to chat with us today. On this episode, it was really great talking about UX UI and the relationship with the startup community, and how that whole world has evolved and how the digital world, the digital design world is moving forward.
Yeah, we had a really nice time and we got to kind of dig in and discuss a lot of facets of this category, and we hope you guys were able to get a lot out of this episode, and we know a lot of creatives are getting interested in getting into the startup world. So there's a lot of opportunity out there. There's a lot of ways you can apply your talent.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. So before we sign off for this episode, let's tell all you guys where you could find us. So to find us at Creative Honey, you go to our website, creativehoney.org. You can find us in all the different social media outlets. We're on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. And I believe that's creativehoney_ on Twitter. And Maria, where are we on Instagram?
You can just actually type in Creative Honey altogether for Instagram. And then on Facebook, it's Creative Honey Media.
There you go. And individually, you could find us at Primer, primer.la, and activecolor.com. And you could email us at... Maria, where can you email us?
You already forgot. You can email us at hello@creativehoney.org. If you have any questions, comments, requests, we'd love to hear from you there or any other of the outlets.
Yeah, and we're individually on social media as well. Zachary R. Hill for me and Maria Fofia for Maria on Instagram.
It's actually Maria_Fofia.
Oh, yeah, I forgot that. That underscore is key. No, it definitely is. So look for us both on there. And like Maria said, find us at hello@creativehoney.org. And finally, please find us on iTunes. Give us a review and a rating. It really helps the podcast grow. We want to get more consistent with this and build it up to something, and you know, getting more reviews and ratings kind of will inspire us to maybe get focused a little bit more, to be honest, and see where we could go with this. So thank you guys so much for listening, and stay tuned for the second part of the startup weekend startup series, where we're going to be at Startup Weekend and talk to some organizers and some people in that event, and we'll respond to that. So stay tuned.
Thanks so much for listening, guys. We'll be back soon.